Did you pick your pants with secret when you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you? Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you? Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger right here in the bunker.
Hi, I'm Tom Metzger, your host for Race and Reason. You know us. We've been around for almost 10 years now, talking about free speech from a white man's point of view and a white woman's point of view. That island of free speech, a sea of controlled and managed news. And you know, on this show, anything goes. We have total free speech here, much better than on regular TV and radio. Today we have a guest. His name is Eric Owens. He's grown up pretty much in the white separatist movement, and he is also a musician. He's traveled around Europe, and he's had a lot to do with foreign bands and so forth, and we welcome Eric on the show.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be here.
Great. Eric, give us a little background how you got involved in all this racial political struggle.
Okay. Well, in about the time I was in junior high school, I started to get involved in skinhead music. I've always been a musically oriented person, and I listened to a lot of skinhead, English skinhead music.
I like Screwdriver.
Yeah, bands like Screwdriver and Brutal Attack and different English skinhead bands. At that time, those were the only skinhead bands really around. And around the time I had begun high school, I had started an oi band, which was not really politically motivated, but more skinhead working class patriotic kind of music at the time, and that was called Fatal Blow, that group. And we'd never played. We played in a garage and we made a tape, but we didn't do much. And then a few years down the road, I started another band called Lion's Pride, which was a strictly oi band. I think of it now as sort of the musical equivalent to the Wally George Show. It was very, very patriotic.
Now, you know, everybody out there at TV Land knows Wally George.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we played patriotic music, pro-working class music, and very violent music, advocating violence. But the message was very right-wing, very conservative. Then after I broke that band up, I joined another band that was playing at the time called the Boot Boys, and that was in over in Orange County. And I started the commute to Orange County, and I started playing with them. And they were more aggressive and a better band, one that more fit my musical talent. So I joined that band, the message was pretty much the same in that band until about a year down the road, some changes had started to happen with some of the most influential members of the band, like myself and a couple other members of the band. And so we wanted to start singing about race. We felt more that our old conservative ideas had proven to be useless, and we wanted to start buckling down on the real problems.
So this was, it's been about three bands here.
Yeah.
And so you evolved out of the playpen, out of the right-wing conservative, into race is the main issue.
Yes. Playpen is right. I was dabbling with the John Birch Society and
don't feel bad.
All the rest of
we
it.
We were all in that playpen at one time. Yeah. I was in a lot longer than most of the young people have sense enough to learn a little bit and get out and go on to better things.
Right. So then with that change, we wanted to change our name from Boot Boys because it had an old following that we wanted to lose that wasn't racially motivated, and so we changed our name to Youngblood. And at that point, we cut an album with Rockorama Records in Germany.
Didn't I come to a studio one time where you were playing in Orange County?
Yes.
Did you cut a record then?
We cut a record shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. That was a few months before our record.
I see.
We cut a record, and then we did a couple other recordings. We were on a compilation called No Surrender Volume 3 with some really big skinhead bands in England. It had us. It featured a couple other American bands, which by that time more American bands started to surface. And we were on there with Screwdriver and Brutal Attack. And that was a good record.
That's good company.
Yeah, they're doing a lot now, and they're getting better and better. All their records back then were produced well for our type of music. And now the improvement in the quality of the records and the covers and the professionalism of Rockorama has gotten much better.
But Rockorama was raided not too long ago in Germany, weren't they?
Yeah, they're still going strong, though.
Oh, they are?
They were raided, and they're periodically raided by the police, and all their inventory is illegally seized and stolen. But he bounces back, and they keep rocking.
Does he ever get any of his stuff back from the police?
No. They go in and they seize, but then he's able to bounce back. Most of the stuff he sells is not illegal in Germany. There are strict freedom of speech laws in Germany. They don't allow you to say too many racial things. But most of the things that he puts out still fall within the legal boundaries.
Now, isn't there some other people putting out records over there, too, or is it just mainly Rockorama?
Well, it's really exploding now. There are more and more record labels popping up all the time. Now there's a couple of really radical French labels that are blow Rockorama away when it comes to radical messages.
Now, those primarily French-speaking bands, or these? Do they have Americans too, and stuff like that?
I'm not aware of who all of the bands that are on the labels, but they do everything. They do French music, German music. I just got a French record with Portuguese skinhead bands, and
how about the Spanish? I know there's Spanish, a lot of Spanish skinheads.
There's basically now any major city in the Western world, in the white world, has number of skinhead bands.
Now, you just went to Europe and toured Europe lately.
Not a musical tour, but we traveled around. We hit a few countries, such as Germany and Ireland and England and France.
Now, they have skinhead and white-type music in, like, Ireland?
Yes, they do in Ireland. They have, there's a band in Dublin called Celtic Dawn. They're a good band in Dublin, Ireland, and they've been around for a few years, and they're growing. There's also another Celtic band in Wales called Celtic Warrior. and they're good. And
how do they relate, like the Welsh, to the Wales, the Welsh separatist type movement? Did you hear about any of that going on there? You got the Welsh separatist movement, then you got the Belgiques over there, and the Wallonia and so forth. They're trying to split up. Does that enter into their music?
No. No, it's not. We feel now that there is so much conflict with the other races that we're not going to worry about political territory. Right now, it's we're not going to fight about politics. It's race.
Is there any chance for the British and the Irish to cool it a little bit? I mean, here is Britain totally being invaded by hundreds of thousands of third worlders, but yet they got all this time, the Irish and the British, to fight. Is there anything we could do to calm that down a little bit?
Well, there's the Republic of Ireland is not at war with England, and that's not a problem. There is a small guerrilla war going on in the northern part of Ireland, and that really doesn't affect us too much. Of course, we'd like to see it all stop. We don't need white people killing white people over any issue.
That's right. Well, what is the issue there? Like when the Brits, and I see in their papers saying the stuff about the Irish and back and forth, are they're not really attacking like the people in the Republic of Ireland so much? It's just this up in the, you know, the problems they got in the north?
Well, there is a problem in that... there's a lot of bigotry, unfortunately, in England against Irish people. They're called Paddies, and I had, unfortunately, it's a real shame, but I had a skinhead, and this isn't an official stance that any paper has taken, and they don't have this stance, and they sing about white unity, but unfortunately, they haven't got the message out to all the skinheads on the street who refer to Irish as the Mexicans of England and things along that line. And they seem to be very preoccupied with the fight between the IRA and the English government. And I think that they should, I think we should just forget about that. We may not like the IRA and what they do, but we don't like what the British government does either.
Right.
So why don't we drop those senseless political battles and let's start with race.
Pan-Aryanism.
Yes, pan-Aryanism. When you've got a country like England that is so small and is being completely overrun by third worlders from Pakistan and the like, the thought of taking your energy to back up right-wing political groups that are out to kill other Aryans over stupid political territory.
That would sort of be like Californians not being too concerned about the Mexicans, but if 10 Canadians came across the border, they'd go bananas or something?
Well, that's kind of what bothered me.
We'll evolve out of this, don't you think?
I think so. I think responsibility is going to lie with us. Since a lot of the publications, racial publications, are outlawed in Europe, they do get a lot of their publications from the United States. I know the Ku Klux Klan has become very large in Europe. And the name Tom Metzger I heard more than once in Europe. So we have to take it upon ourselves to set some people straight. They're dealing with a lot of ancient right-wing political ideas that have no bearing anymore, and they're useless to our
movement. So we have to put just narrow nationalism to rest.
We have to throw it completely away.
As the same way as we do for the international leftist type thing.
Yeah.
Both extremes are bad for our race, right?
The whole idea of fighting other Aryans because they're communists or because they're Muslims or because they're this or that is beyond us now.
Now, what other countries did you get into while you were over there besides England and the Irish?
Oh, we were in Germany. And unfortunately, I saw the same problem in Germany, except to an even greater extent. The German skinheads that I was with, they were talking about chartering a bus to take about 150 or so German skinheads to go beat up the Polish skinheads in Poland at a screwdriver concert that was happening in Poland over Silesia, over national borders.
Yeah, they go on for decades and decades, generations for generations. And don't you think, though, it's sort of fostered by a small group of conservative right-winger types that just keep this stuff alive?
They do, because they can't see the big picture, and they are so preoccupied with their own tiny country's borders that they don't see the big picture. And if anyone... And the problem with a lot of the skinheads is they don't do, some do, but some don't do the reading that they should be doing. They don't do the historical study that they should be doing, and then they would know. Anyone who's read about the Roman Empire picking off the Gauls one by one can see where this kind of nationalism leads.
Yeah.
When you've got such a tiny little area, Europe is a very small place. The countries are very small. We have a tiny minority. White people in the world population are a tiny minority. And for us to fight, just as the ancient Gauls fought over their little tribal problems while the Romans took them over one by one.
Look how we were manipulated into World War I and World War II.
That's right.
And now they even want to get us into Bosnia and the Balkans and so forth.
That's right.
It's the same old nonsense. Look, I hear you brought your guitar on the show, and you was going to maybe play a little tune for us.
Okay,
I think our friends out there are watching Race and Reason today might enjoy this. So,
well,
Eric Owens, what's the name of the song you're going to play?
This is a song, it's called Running Free, and it'll be on my new solo album, which is mostly going to be folk music, a lot of... Mostly bagpipe music, but I'm going to do a couple of songs. In the schoolhouse, teaching the lesson for the day. Found time for the other's children with her own child on the way. It all came to an end that night when the bullets broke the air. What a sight to see a young mother to be with her blood flowing everywhere. Get back on your feet, my sister, and walk alongside of me. And I'll fight for the future that your enemies couldn't see. As long as I got a life to live, you'll live inside of me. Hold your head up high, Kathy Ainsworth, you're still running. Like a fugitive, trapped with his family, trying to live his own life in a wicked democracy. Then one day the shots rang out and it all came crashing down. A young schoolboy who never had a chance, his dead body on the ground. Get back on your feet, my brother, and walk alongside of me. And I'll fight for the future that your enemies couldn't see. As long as I got a life to live, you're the life inside of me. Hold your head up high, little Samuel Weaver, you're still running free.
odds all stacked against him, running out of time. With no judge or jury, they sentenced him to die. They set his house ablaze that night, and the young man burned alive. Get back on your feet, my brother, walk alongside of me, and I'll fight for the future that your enemies couldn't see. As long as I got a life to live, you're living inside of me. Hold your head up high, Robert Matthews, you're still running. But the love we feel deep in our hearts for you is just the same. And if my turn comes to die at the hands of this tyranny, I hope somebody somewhere can sing this song for me. Get back on your feet, my people, and walk alongside of me. And we'll fight for the future that your enemies couldn't see. As long as I got a life to live, you're living inside of me. Hold your head up high, my brothers and sisters, you're still running.
Oh, you know, okay. I'm happy to see more of this folk music racially oriented coming into play now. Did you see some of this in Europe while you were there?
Well, in Germany, there is a man. He's a bit older, and he, meaning not an old man, but not a young, like, skinhead. And he's a little bit more on the conservative side, but he is a
national... We won't hold that too much against
him.
No.
His message is good. He's a national socialist, and his name is Frank Reinecker, and he plays at the annual Rudolf Hess marches, and he plays at national socialist meetings around Germany, and he's got a few records out, and he's really good acoustic singer.
I noticed your song talked about Kathy Ainsworth, which many people would never know. She was a school teacher in Mississippi in the 60s. It was gunned down by the FBI, and mainly the FBI, and she was set up by the Anti-Defamation League people, the Jews, that paid the big money for the FBI to kill her. They almost killed the man she was with, and so she became a martyr, a heroine to the race, and she was a school teacher, and she was pregnant at the time. Then we had Sammy Weaver, who was shot and killed because he tried to defend his dog just last year up in Idaho, and then Robert Matthews, and more people know about Robert Matthews and the order and how it took, I guess, about 500 federal swine to get him.
Yeah. Can't keep a good man down.
Can't keep a good man down, and he's probably more dangerous to them dead now than he was alive because his spirit seems to keep moving. So you're going to concentrate on this style of music, you think, quite a bit.
Folk music, yes. It's something, I play a number of instruments, guitar being my weakest, that I can put out my own records without having a whole group, and I can gear it exactly the way I want to gear it. It's a lot easier for me to do it this way.
Did you say that you were going to cut a record? Did I hear you say
yes.
that?
Yes. In a couple of weeks, I'm going in the studio. And
or do you do CDs now? Maybe I'm from the old school, you know, cutting a record.
Well, I'm going to start, actually, with cassettes. Right now, things are kind of in between here. We're phasing out LPs, but still a lot of underground music. The people that would be listening to our kind of music still listen to records because it's harder to get the CDs made.
I think wouldn't it be a good idea to get this folk type music sort of into the skinhead regular music, you know, and have that played in between some of the other songs.
I think,
it down a little bit, yeah. And then pick it up, you know.
I think that'll be happening. It's been happening in England. A lot of the skinhead music here is still kind of new, and so they're getting their aggression out. But it's like I and I played strict, very hard, loud music for many years in my band Youngblood. Now you get a little older, you open up to some new musical ideas.
Now we've got, Marty Cox was telling me they've got the girls that are starting to form their bands up too now.
Yeah.
Pretty soon maybe you'll have some duets going.
Maybe. Be looking forward to it.
All kinds of possibilities.
Yeah.
Well, in Europe, you went to Germany and Britain and Ireland, and was there any place else you visited?
Well, in the past, I've been to quite a few other places, including Croatia and what used to be Yugoslavia. Traveled around.
How long ago were you in Croatia?
That was a few years ago. It was actually not too long before the war broke out. Unfortunately, that's another shameful situation where Aryans are killing Aryans because the Croatians say that the Serbians are communists and the Serbians want domination over the Croatians, and the Serbians and the Croatians want to wipe out
the
blonde-haired, blue-eyed Bosnians because they happen to be Muslim, as if Christianity was any better. I mean, let's face it.
It's a mess.
Yeah, and as we both know, civil wars are the most bloody and wreak the most casualties. And when these people wear themselves out by slaughtering each other, some superpower like the U.S. will set up some military bases there, and they'll see how much freedom they end up with.
So you think that if we design our information that we're sending into Europe, that we can alleviate some of these more nationalist-oriented... You know, nothing wrong with the nationalism, it's just as long as it doesn't interfere with the race. Because every country, every group needs some identity.
Right.
And so nationalism okay as long as they don't want to kill people just across the border that are white.
Why can't
Europe be nationalist and it's facing the third world? I mean, see.
Well, nationalism is bad. Culture is good if you want to keep your folk traditions and your folk dances. That's good, but it's where are you going to put your energy? Are you going to put it into nationalism in your tiny little group, or are you going to put it into racism?
Yeah.
The idea, I'm a racial nationalist. I don't need to wave a United States flag.
Eric, I'm going to have to interrupt
myself.
You because we're running out of time again. And I'd like for you to come back on the show, and we appreciate your singing, your playing, and continued activity in the music, in the racial music business. And thank you out there for joining us today.
Welcome to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. If you spot a mysterious, unexplained creature swimming in the Thames River behind me, don't worry. It's just a city banker dragging boxes of Klein files out of London now that it looks like the population is hell-bent on making David Cameron force some group of suckers to pay for his father's offshore trust shenanigans. Stacey.
This is an actual story apparently going on. Scientists are confounded by this mysterious, unexplained creature spotted swimming in the Thames.
I thought it was Boris Johnson, you know. He's got the kind of the fatuousness and the flatulenceness to propel himself along the Thames in such a manner.
Well, to me, it seems more like it's probably related to these Panama Papers because it emerged on the same day or the day after. And it does look like a little, you know, probably an intern being underpaid in some back office in some law firm or some accountancy firm here or some KPMG sort of company and pulling boxes of the files up the river.
Yeah, up to the Thames, up to Greenwich.
And, of course, this was actually from a iPhone video, some smartphone video taken from the Emirates. that cable car. So the Emiratis, all the Middle Eastern money, is all over in these Panama Papers.
It's the Loch Cameron monster. It's the Loch Cameron monster in the Thames.
So this story is still playing out here, this tax haven story, because UK tax haven, the BVI, is the most popular for Moss Fund clients. So it emerges that, here in the UK, less so in the U.S. The U.S. hasn't really even covered any of these Panama Papers, but the U.K. is all outraged. But if you look at the entire fabric of the city right here behind us, probably even the Thames, by the way, is held by an offshore company. I will bet you that, because all of these buildings, everything is probably offshore. This whole infrastructure, the Moore London thing, is owned by the Kuwaiti royal family, I assume probably through an offshore company. A lot of the royal families across the Middle East owned through offshore companies, and partly they wanted privacy. They didn't want people to know which buildings they own.
Well, can I interject something here?
You must. This is your point in the show where you interject.
I'd like to interject. I'd like to talk a little bit about Jimmy Carr.
Oh, yes, yes. Jimmy Carr is a comedian here, and a few years ago, of course, he was all over the television here, and then he disappeared when David Cameron condemned him for using Jersey in offshore funds.
Right. There was a tax vehicle for, I think, that he was investing in that was authorized by the Treasury. It was a legitimate tax motivated investment. I think it was into a package of films or something like that. And David Cameron got up in the House of Commons and publicly vilified Jimmy Carr, a performer, a comedian, someone who is very successful. He's a wealthy guy, but he's not an oligarch. He's not on the Ian Cameron scale of wealth, that being David Cameron's father. And now, of course, Jimmy Carr, like so many others in Britain, has done the smart thing. He's over in America now. He's in California. Billboards, Jimmy Carr. He's got a Netflix special. So he's escaped this prison of rats feeding on each other for a few shekels that they can grind out by using all kinds of accounting gimmicks. And he's gone to the land of plenty of milk and honey, America.
Well, I'll quickly read a headline that we're not actually going to go into, but it's from Bloomberg News, which is financial news, and they say that the world's favorite new tax haven is the United States. Moving money out of the usual offshore secrecy havens and into the U.S. is a brisk new business. And that came out before the Panama Papers. So the U.S. is now the biggest tax haven anyway, because everybody knows that they're not safe in these other tax havens, because the U.S. is the empire, and they will go.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's the reason Jimmy Carr went to America. So, Jimmy, I'm not making that connection, but
no, but just because I juxtaposed that headline. But I also want to make a point that Panama Papers, David Cameron faces questions over father's offshore fund in Jersey. Apparently, people have found yet another offshore fund held. I think it's David Cameron's father set it up, and it's held in his mother's name or something like that. I don't know. But the point is, all of these offshore funds and trusts are legal as long as they're paying taxes. But so we don't know what the personal circumstances are of any of these offshore funds. But the Evening Standard, of course, the London newspaper, is warning Panama Papers, warning over blow to London's property market, because one of the biggest property owners via these offshore funds, Emir of Abu Dhabi, the president of UAE. And they're warning in this article that a lot of these guys use these offshore funds for privacy. And so now that they're unlikely to get this privacy, they might not want to. They own £170 billion via offshore funds of property in London. And whether or not that's dumped or changed.
Well, they say price precedes news. That's an old Wall Street axiom. And in the high end of the London property market over the past 3 to 6 months, we're starting to see some softness. Prices are coming in. So the prices were already going down. So the price was preceding this news. Now we've got some news that all these hundreds of billions of pounds worth of offshore money into the London property market, that tap may be cut off. And that would undermine the entire property market, and which has been transformed in a way that precludes the ability of middle-class people and actual people that work for a living, that do stuff and service the economy in meaningful ways can't live in London anymore. They've been pushed to the fringes, pushed out of London. So is it going to be like Bangkok in the late 90s? You know, we were visiting Bangkok, and it was just a ghost city where construction stopped mid-project. Cranes were, you know, just stopped in the mid-air, and it just stopped. You know, there's over 220 or 230 skyscrapers authorized to be built in London, already ready to go. But if you're going to cut off the faucet of hundreds of billions of pounds worth of this money, it's not going to come in.
It's like a black swan in the economy, because this is all the economy is here. You've worked to restart factories and manufacturing things to have a real economy will take quite a long time to build up the infrastructure again. So if you're suddenly pulling the money laundering angle out of the
economy,
it
makes the whole closure of Tata Steel or the sale of Tata Steel even more catastrophic. Because these are actual people doing actual jobs for actual money that goes into the real economy. And if you're getting rid of that, and at the same time, you're cutting off the infusion of overseas into this property market, that's not going to work. And the current account deficit is already at historic highs in this country.
Well, exactly. But for me, the major issue coming out of this is that the UK press is most outraged by this Panama Papers story. But to me, it seems so weird because the entire fabric of this economy in particular is offshore anyway. Not only is the UK an offshore tax haven anyway, but everything, all of your government private finance initiative contracts, for example, so your public buildings like your hospitals and schools are primarily done via offshore companies anyway. Also, the HMRC, your actual tax collector here, the equivalent of your IRS in the UK, the 600 of their buildings across the UK are owned via offshore vehicle. So your fab, this is offshore. There's nothing but offshore here. So the fact that everybody here is suddenly like, what's that scene in Casablanca? I'm shocked to discover this gambling going on here. It's just weird for an offshore population to be so particularly outraged, more than the American press or anything else, about offshore stuff.
Well, let me make the comparison to Greece, because Greece was targeted by financial elites to kill the country using financial derivatives.
Yeah.
Now that's become a fact. I mean, we reported on it years ago, and now it's fact that the country was worth more dead than alive. In Britain, post-Thatcher, you have essentially a leveraged buyout of a country by foreign money. And they replace the actual assets, whether it's the postal service, the NHS, the steel industry, energy industry, coal industry, with paper, with debt.
Held by a BVI, you know, in the British Virgin Islands, right, in some post box there.
Exactly.
But I also
now,
wanna...
but now we're at a point when, like, in the Allergan deal in Ireland.
Yeah, Allergan, Pfizer, the U.S. mega big pharma was allegedly bought by Allergan. Right. They were going to merge with them, and now the U.S.
As for a tax inversion, for a tax dodge.
Yeah, a tax
And now
dodge.
Suddenly they change the law, and they call off its $160 billion deal, went up in smoke in a day. It caused huge
because
ripple effect.
Because of popular outrage, because no other industry in America has been more inflationary, jacking up prices, more monopolistic in behavior, and received far more subsidies than almost any other industry
in
America.
Right, and the problem in this country is that when people make money on a property bubble, they tend to have a sense of entitlement that it's very easy for the British population because, after all, they live under a monarchy.
Yes.
So they can mimic the Queen, who has a rightful claim on entitlement. But what happens is you've got middle-class people suddenly owning 20 buy-to-let properties, getting money for nothing due to quantitative easing and becoming paper millionaires. They think suddenly, I'm the Queen also. But guess what? When this thing blows, the Queen will still be the Queen and he'll be in debt.
So I want to quickly move on to another issue of outrage, and this is not being covered at all in the press. But this week there was also the Dutch EU-Ukraine referendum held. And I want to look at Carl Bildt. Now, he was the former prime minister of Sweden, and then for the longest time he became the foreign affairs minister and is often butting into European situations. And as the Dutch vote was happening on Wednesday, he first tweeted, "Let's see, but so far it looks as if Dutch referendum on EU-Ukraine agreement fails to reach required 30% turnout." And then it hit the 32% turnout. So the referendum, it's not binding, but the government said they would listen to the people. The people voted no by over 60% of the Dutch population who voted. They voted no. They don't want an EU-Ukraine agreement. So here is what Carl Bildt then tweeted. Agreement EU-Ukraine already approved by 29 Democratic EU parliaments. Those voting no in Netherlands today are 0.006% of electorate in EU, which somebody pointed out that is actually 0.6%, not 0.006%. But this is what, you know, offshore makes you helpless to go to sue that company if, say, the hospital they built collapses and all the patients in there die and all the visiting those visiting patients die. You can't sue them because they're somewhere in Panama or the BVI or the Seychelles. But the same thing here is what you see his mindset, Carl Bildt's mindset about the EU, is in this huge project governed by these unbreakable TPP sort of TTIP contracts. Well, they're saying, well, just you and your little sovereign pity little nation of 17 million people, you Dutch people, you're only a small percentage of this mass of 380 million people we have, so your concerns don't count. That's a sort of offshoring of your sovereignty.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's only going to get worse with these global trade deals like TTIP and other global trade deals. We see that a sovereign country has no say.
A sovereign country has no say. And by the way, what they voted no to is exactly what Yanukovych also said no to, and he was overthrown, chased out of the country. And, you know, well, it could be a coincidence that Victoria Nuland and John McCain showed up the week before handing out cookies. I actually wanted to bring cookies here for this episode to talk about this. But they could be visited soon. John McCain, if John McCain shows up in Amsterdam and Dam Square
but
or something.
But what was the sales pitch to get the Dutch to vote for this anyway? That because, I mean,
well,
Ukraine,
the only reason why there was even a referendum was the popular uprising. If you got 50,000 people to sign a petition to demand a referendum, by Dutch law, they had to have a referendum.
Yeah, but Ukraine's a basket case. Why would you want it in the EU? What's the sales pitch there? What's the upside?
The point here is that the democracy is something foisted upon others. You yourself cannot have it. It's foisted upon people they don't like.
Well, you know, maybe it was something that Ukraine was doing that the Dutch didn't want, and I can name many things to fit that bill. But we must go. So I must say adios, and we're going to go into the Thames to search for whatever that is.
It was you. You're the mysterious creature. You just gave yourself away.
No, but I think this is finally solving the Lord Lucan question. It was Lord Lucan. They finally, it was him floating up the Thames. So we can put that to rest now. We finally solved that puzzle. Stay tuned for the second half. A whole lot more.